The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Pat Perry for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Money Matters. Today's episode of Money Matters is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the News and Observer. Today's stories include: Now vaccinated, older adults emerge from COVID hibernation. And move over, vinyl, cassette tapes are the new old thing to love. And we'll begin with now vaccinated, older adults emerge from COVID hibernation. Bill Griffin waited more than a year for this moment. Newly vaccinated, he embraced his 3-year-old granddaughter for the first time since the pandemic began. She came running right over. I picked her up and gave her a hug. It was amazing, the 70-year-old said after the reunion last weekend. Spring has arrived with sunshine and warmer weather, and many older adults who have been vaccinated, like Griffin, are emerging from the COVID-19 imposed hibernation. From shopping in person or going to the gym to bigger milestones like visiting family, the people who were once most at risk from COVID-19 are beginning to move forward with getting their lives on track. Nearly 45% of Americans who are 65 and older are now fully vaccinated. Visiting grandchildren is a top priority for many older adults. In Arizona, Galen Krug has yet to hold her first grandchild, who was born a month into the pandemic in Minneapolis. Now fully vaccinated, Krug is making plans to travel for her granddaughter's first birthday in April. I can't wait, said Krug, whose only interactions with the girl have been over Zoom and FaceTime. It's very strange to not have her in my life yet. The excitement she feels, however, is tempered with sadness. Her daughter-in-law's mother, who she had been looking forward to sharing grandma duties with, died of COVID-19 just hours after the baby's birth. She contracted it at a nursing home. Isolated by the pandemic, older adults were hard hit by loneliness caused by restrictions intended to keep people safe. Many of them sat out summer reunions, canceled vacation plans, and missed family holiday gatherings in November and December. In states with older populations like Maine, Arizona, and Florida, health officials worried about the emotional and physical toll of loneliness posing an additional health concern on top of the virus. But that's changing, and the more older people are reappearing in public after they were among the first group to be vaccinated. Those who are fully vaccinated are ready to get out of Dodge without worrying they were endangering themselves amid a pandemic that has claimed more than 540,000 lives in the United States. Now there is an extra level of confidence. I am feeling good about moving forward, said Ken Hughes, a 79-year-old Florida resident who is flying with his wife for a pandemic-delayed annual trip to Arizona in April. Plenty of older adults are eager to hop on a jet to travel. Others are looking forward to the simpler things like eating at a restaurant, going to a movie theater, or playing bingo. Sally Adams, 74, was among several older people who showed up for a parking lot bingo in Glendale, Arizona. She felt safe because she had been vaccinated and because she was in her car at the first bingo event in more than a year. Once she fulfills the time to reach peak immunity, she plans to indulge in little things, like eating out. Both her and her husband, who is also vaccinated, have only done takeout. Now they feel like it will be okay to even eat indoors, as long as it's not crowded. will probably go in and take the farthest table from other people just to be on the safe side, she said. Indeed, many older adults are taking a cautious approach, especially when the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention declined to ease recommendations for travel. Frequent traveler Cindy Cherist was so excited about the prospect of jetting away for the first time in more than a year that she posted an airplane emoji with a photo of her being vaccinated on social media. But she's taking a wait-and-see attitude after the CDC recommended against non-essential air travel for now. I think I got prematurely excited about it, said Cherist, 65, of Westbrook, Maine, but she's ready to jump when the time comes. She's watching for changing guidance. Others are also cautious. We're still in the thick of it, said Claudette Green, 68, of Portland, Maine. We've made a lot of progress, but we're not done with this. Kathy Bubar said that she and her husband are completely vaccinated, but are in no hurry to push things. The 73-year-old Portland resident is planning to wait until fall before planning any major travel. She hopes to go on a safari in December. Democrats aim to stop USPS mail slowing plan. Democrats are swarming to block a key piece of Postmaster General Louis DeJoy's 10-year restructuring plan for the U.S. Postal Service, casting doubt on the feasibility of his proposals for achieving financial stability for the agency. A group of House Democrats on Friday introduced legislation to prohibit the Postal Service from lengthening mail delivery windows and require it to adhere to present service expectations. They named the bill the Delivering Envelopes Judiciously on Time, Year-Round Act, or DeJoy Act. One House aide involved in postal reform legislation introduced in February said some members of the caucus are leery of proceeding with efforts to address the Postal Service's financial obligations, given that DeJoy's 10-year plan includes sharp reductions in service, including slower timetables for mail delivery and reduced post office hours. Separately, Pennsylvania Attorney General Josh Shapiro, a Democrat, threatened to take legal action to block the service cuts. Mounting concern among Democrats who can't afford few defections from their narrow House majority if they hope to pass postal reform could throw off the Postmaster General's entire Delivering for America proposal. DeJoy hoped to save the Postal Service $160 billion over the next decade through a combination of austerity measures, postage price increases, and projected package volume growth. But the largest single piece of his plan is dependent on Congress repealing its pre-funding mandate for retiree health care cost, which runs about $5 billion a year. Instead, the agency wants to wind down those payments and enroll future retirees in Medicare, a proposal worth $44 billion. A bill introduced by Representative Carolyn B. Maloney, chair of the powerful House Oversight and Reform Committee, includes both components. But DeJoy's designs to slow the mail, even as the Postal Service attempts to rebound from generationally poor service metrics in recent months, and perceived animus toward lawmakers in recent hearings, have made those prospects more difficult. Under current service standards, or the amount of time the Postal Service allots itself to deliver a piece of mail, it should take no more than 3 days for a first-class mail item to arrive, regardless of where it is being sent in the United States. Under DeJoy's plan, the 3-day standard would still apply to 70% of first-class mail items. But for the remaining 30%, which is roughly 5 billion pieces of mail, the benchmark will go from 3 to as many as 5 days based on destination mileage. This particular change, going from 100% of first-class mail being delivered 1 to 3 days to only 70%, would be a non-starter, in my opinion, with the American people. Representative Raja Krishnamoorthy, Democrat, Illinois, who introduced the DeJoy Act with 6 Democratic co-sponsors, told Washington Post. Move over, vinyl. Cassette tapes are the new old thing to love. The vinyl resurgence has been keeping independent record stores alive for years, and it hit a milestone in 2020. Music fans spent more money on LPs than CDs last year for the first time since 1986. But the desire to possess an analog recording that you can actually hold in your hands in a streaming era when everything seems ephemeral isn't limited to records. It's now also about cassette tapes, which are making a comeback. On Discogs, the online database where fans buy and sell vinyl and other physical products, U.S. cassette tape sales were up 33% last year. Part of the appeal, new tape releases are cheaper than new releases on vinyl. Phoebe Bridgers' 2020 album Punisher sells for $23 on vinyl, said Pat Feeney, owner of Maniac's Main Street Music, which this month started to once again devote store space to cassettes. In a fluorescent green limited edition cassette, Punisher went for $10. The rare cassette market is also robust, particularly for hip-hop releases from the golden age of the genre, when cassettes were also at their peak. A mint copy of Illmatic, the 1994 debut album by Nas, was on sale on Discogs this week for, $13,999.98. Beyond that, there are music labels like This and That Tapes, which Joseph Carlo runs out of his Philadelphia home, that deals exclusively in cassettes. For Carlo, 34, who founded the label in 2019, the appeal of the cassette is its homemade quality. Cassettes are like the zines of the music industry, he said. Anyone can make a cassette. The fragility of the medium and even the tape hiss is part of the aesthetic appeal, Carlo said. There's something satisfying about watching the wheels turn while you listen and knowing, I made this. When the medium's inventor, the Dutch engineer Lou Ottens, died this month at age 94, he was memorialized internationally for creating the iconic object, which gave rise to the cherished mixtape. While it takes just minutes to put together a playlist on Spotify or Apple Music, making a cassette mix takes time and tender loving care, as Rolling Stone writer Rob Sheffield put it in his 2007 memoir about music and grief. Love is a mixtape. Last year, This and That released Word Salad, a 6-song cassette tape EP of songs written and recorded during lockdown by Joe Jack Talcum, guitarist for legendary Philly punk band The Dead Milkmen. I love cassettes, said Talcum, 58, whose given name is Joe Gennaro. I have a love-hate relationship with them. They're in boxes in my house all over the place. They were the first thing I started recording on when I was a teen. He has an ongoing project digitizing old Milkmen shows recorded on cassette tapes and posting them on jacktalcum.com. The medium still appeals, he says. A mixtape is cooler than a mixed CD or a playlist. You can put strange, funny things and sound effects in there. There's something human about them. Most This and That tapes, like the 2021 release Morning Moon by Tacoma, Washington songwriter Lauren Napier, and Pick Up the Phone, a recent one under Carlo's own synth pop stage name, A Good Host, are issued in batches of a few hundred. It cost him $2 or $3 to make them, and he sells them for $8 or $12, splitting profits with the artist. Last year, he had sales of $14,000 and turned a profit for the first time. But cassettes aren't just small business. The medium took a turn back into the mainstream with 2014's Guardians of the Galaxy, in which Chris Pratt's character listens to a mixtape of 70s hits on his Walkman. That's his only connection to his mother. That soundtrack mix was issued on cassette and became a hit, as have three recent volumes of soundtrack tapes from the Netflix series Stranger Things. In a sure sign that cassettes are a cool object of the moment, Urban Outfitters now sells both cassette tape releases and cassette tape players. Hot cassette releases on the Urban website include Taylor Swift's Evermore and Arcade Fire's score to the 2013 sci-fi movie Her, which came out last month, and it's designed to look like a homemade cassette. Urban carries portable cassette players that start at $30 and a dual cassette deck retro street Bluetooth boombox for $150. Demand for vintage tape players is also spiking. I bought so many Walkman for $4, said Carlo. Now they're going for $30 or $40. There's a coolness factor, said Edwin Perez, 33, an art teacher and cassette collector who works part-time at Main Street Music. The kids see Stranger Things, and then they find a bag of cassettes in their parents' basement, and it starts from there, Perez said. A lot of people, millennials, people in my generation, are really into thrifting, looking for old clothing or anything old. That's a big part of the culture. The medium has a strong emotional hold on Perez. His parents immigrated from Bolivia, where his father had owned a record store. Relatives kept in touch by sending tapes with a mix of songs and personal messages. My grandparents would be like, "We miss you. Have you forgotten about us?" And by the end of side B, everyone would be a little tipsy, and it was beautiful. And next, an editorial from the News and Observer, taking a look under the hood at the causes of rising gas prices, by Nicholas Loris. The national average for a price of gallon of gasoline is quickly approaching $3. Some states are already there. Facebook memes and Twitter trolls have been quick to blame the change in administrations, noting that prices have jumped about 45 cents per gallon since President Joe Biden took office. But is that really the case? The reality is gas prices have been increasing for nearly a year. Correlation can be a funny thing. As Tyler Vigen, author of Spurious Correlations, points out, one can also find a strong correlation between the divorce rate in Maine and the per capita consumption of margarine. As statisticians like to say, correlation is not causation. And as economists like to say, a better place to look is supply and demand. Several factors influence the price at the pump, the largest being the price of crude oil at 43% of the cost. Although the U.S. is the world's largest oil producer, oil is a globally traded commodity. Therefore, events that affect the supply and demand of oil in the U.S. and around the world make their way into the price displayed at the station. To boost prices when they began falling sharply a year ago, the Organization of the Petroleum Exporting Countries and Russia agreed to continue curtailing production. Now, however, demand is picking back up. In the U.S., the deployment of the COVID-19 vaccine and states easing lockdown restrictions have Americans traveling at the highest rate since the pandemic hit. Economic activity in other major energy-consuming countries, particularly China, has also increased. Consequently, the price of a barrel of crude is around $60, nearly double what it was a year ago. Refining is the second largest cost, making up a quarter of the retail price for the gasoline. The recent severe coal snap in the Gulf Coast not only reduced domestic crude production by 10%, it also knocked 20% of the entire country's refining capacity offline. In addition, spring is the season for refineries to retool their operations to switch from winter blends of gasoline to summer blends. The summer blend is more expensive to make, adding 5 to 15 cents to the price. Federal and state taxes on average add another 30 cents per gallon and make up 22% of the retail price. In theory, the gas tax is an efficient user fee to maintain the national highway system. In practice, however, special interests siphon off gas tax dollars for projects like public transit, where the merits of the project should be evaluated and paid for at the state or local level. Americans pay higher hidden costs today from the bad public policy decisions made long ago. For instance, the Jones Act, passed in 1920, mandates that any goods shipped by water between two points in America must be transported on a U.S.-built, U.S.-flagged vessel with a crew that is at least 75% American. By preventing foreign competition, the Jones Act drives up costs for no material, economic, or national security benefit. Another hidden cost is the Renewable Fuel Standard, passed in 2005 and expanded in 2007. The policy mandates that billions of gallons of ethanol, primarily corn-based, be blended into gasoline each year. A 2019 Government Accountability Office report found outside the Midwest, the mandate pushed fuel prices higher for limited, if any, environmental or climate benefit. The poor legacy of market-distorting policies should serve as a warning for Biden. Actions made today will have long-lasting impacts. We may not see the price impacts of canceling the Keystone XL pipeline or banning new oil and gas lease sales on federal lands reflected in the price today, but decisions that restrict supply now will have a price impact later. Notably, restrictions on domestic production and transportation will likely have the unintended environmental consequence of relying on riskier modes of transportation. The economic impact may not seem like all that much, a few pennies here and a few there. Collectively, though, the price impacts of such policies start to add up. Multiply it by the 337 million gallons of gas Americans consume each day, and it really starts to add up. As Americans continue to grasp with the economic fallout of the pandemic, every penny should count. Millions could see lower health costs under stimulus package. The $1.9 trillion COVID-19 relief package signed into law by President Joe Biden earlier this month includes health care subsidies that could make coverage more affordable for millions of Americans. Here's what to know. What's included? The American Rescue Plan includes a temporary increase in tax credits for many people who buy health insurance through the Affordable Care Act's marketplace. Those credits will reduce the premiums that eligible Americans pay for coverage. Who is eligible? Almost everyone who buys health insurance through the marketplace. 92% of people who buy their own health insurance are eligible for a subsidy under the Affordable Care Act, the Kaiser Family Foundation found. Of that 8% who aren't getting a subsidy, those are really high-income people who would pay less than 8.5% of their income for a premium without a subsidy. Cynthia Cox, Kaiser Vice President, said during a webinar last week. Kaiser also found that 1.4 million uninsured people are newly eligible for subsidized marketplace coverage. What's different? Before the American Rescue Plan was passed, households were required to contribute as much as 9.83% of their income to pay for marketplace insurance premiums, and households with incomes more than 400% above the federal poverty level were not eligible for tax credits to help pay for coverage plans. Now, no households will be required to contribute more than 8.5% of the income to pay for coverage premiums, according to a fact sheet from the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. Those earning up to 150% of the federal poverty level will not be required to pay any premiums for a benchmark plan, according to the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities. Previously, those earning 100% of the federal poverty level were required to contribute 2.07% of household income for a benchmark plan, and those earning 150% had to contribute 4.14%, according to Kaiser. Kaiser found that the number of people eligible for a subsidy has increased by 20%, mostly among those with incomes above 400% of the poverty level. Most of the people who are eligible for subsidies are still making below 400% of poverty, Cox said. The federal poverty level ranges from $12,880 for a one-person household to $26,500 for a household of four and $44,600 and up for households with eight or more people. Why it matters. Premium cost will decrease by an average of $50 per person each month or $85 per policy per month, according to the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. Four out of five people who enroll will be able to find plans that cost no more than $10 a month after the premium tax credits, and half will be able to find a silver plan for $10 or less a month. More than 11.4 million people have enrolled in the marketplace, with California, Florida, North Carolina, and Texas home to the highest numbers of people enrolled, according to Kaiser. We have run out of time for today's episode of Money Matters. I hope you enjoyed it and be sure to listen next time. I am Pat Perry, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's episode of Money Matters is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Money Matters is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.